from the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
That's essentially the Green New Deal. It's nothing to do with climate and energy, and instead it's using a climate scare to impose a progressive wish list upon America.
This is your host, Scott Bertram, and that's Mark Morano, author of the new book, Green Fraud, Why the Green New Deal is Even Worse Than You Think. We'll talk with Mark a little bit later on today's program. Our first guest today is Dr. Paul Marino, Chair in Constitutional History, Professor of History, and Dean of Social Sciences here at Hillsdale College, and a huge baseball fan. We talk with him as the Major League Baseball season gets underway. Dr. Marino, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on the show, Scott.
As I mentioned, baseball, the topic today, I'm a big White Sox fan. And
I'm
you
sorry
are,
to hear that.
I know. Especially the past decade or so. It's been very rough. But you Yankees?
Yes, third generation New York Yankee fan.
Yankees fan?
Brought that with us from New York.
Sorry about that.
Kids of the fourth generation.
We're talking about Major League Baseball, how it became big and big business here in the U.S. and perhaps what its future might be as well. Let's go way back, way back. The origins of the professional leagues, the National League first, the American League second. How did that come about here in the U.S.?
That's an amazing story where people had this idea that you could take this, you know, amusement, this game that mostly young men played just for their own amusement and sort of honor and competition, sort of a fraternity kind of thing, a club sport. And somebody got the idea that you could actually get people to pay money to watch them play this at a very high level. And those are the organizers of professional baseball started in the Civil War was really essential in making a national game out of the sport. There were different regional varieties, a New England game, different types were played. The New York version of the game ended up being the one that became most popular. But the Cincinnati Red Stockings were the first professional team in 1869 that were able to make a national tour and would just beat every other, you know, city's team and made national news and ended up being tremendously good. The city fathers of Cincinnati said, this is really good for business. You know, this is putting Cincinnati on the map, giving us a lot of sort of civic recognition. And so other cities wanted to compete with Cincinnati for that.
So we skip ahead a couple decades, as we will during the conversation, to late 1910s, early 1920s, the Black Sox scandal. Don't want to talk about that too much. But right around that same time, you have this player, Babe Ruth, who moves from Boston to New York and the Yankees, a pitcher to a hitter, and he changes the game. What impact did Babe Ruth have on the game and its popularity?
Yeah, definitely, you know, revolutionized the game and, you know, made the Yankees what they are. They were a terrible team for the first 20 years of their existence. They and the St. Louis Cardinals in the National League didn't win their first pennants until the 1920s. So Ruth definitely made the New York Yankees. And he changed the style of the game. There's still controversy among, you know, scholars of baseball about why, you know, the home run explosion that came in the 1920s came about. Most people just say they juiced the ball, as Verlander has said recently about the recent home run spate. But more people are coming to say, no, Ruth just changed the way the batters approached the ball. He started swinging for the fences. And then other guys like Rogers Hornsby, who was, you know, I think a 5-time 400 hitter, he said, yeah, I could do this too if I change my approach at the plate. And so it was probably more Ruth's, you know, style. And of course he, by making the home run, you know, the dominant feature of the game, and Ruth was certainly an outlandish personality.
Yes.
The stuff about his personal life that the press at the time kept under wraps, is really, you know, quite shocking. But he certainly was, you know, gave one element of the very, you know, very complicated and culturally contradictory decade of the 1920s. He was a jazz age figure.
World War II comes around. You have some of baseball's biggest stars leaving for a couple of years. Ted Williams, Bob Feller, others, to go fight in World War II. How did baseball survive, Major League Baseball survive during this time and then reemerge after the war?
Yeah, they got some, there are a lot of people who got, actually President Roosevelt helped a great deal, where the owners, and the same thing happened during World War I, and during World War I they shortened the seasons, 17-18 at least, and FDR thought it'd be good for, you know, national morale to keep the game going. And it provided some opportunities for, you know, second string players to make their mark. The St. Louis Browns were able to win the only pennant that they ever won in their entire franchise history. And so they, you know, the game, there was some resentment of the way that players who got drafted into the Army were treated. They had special privileges. They often, you know, the Army and the Navy were more interested in using them for their own teams mm-hmm. than they were for combat, understandably. So baseball during World War II also revealed a lot of the social tensions, you know, on the home front and the way in which people who weren't serving, and could have a very good war, you know, sort of resentment by the GIs, but also differences between enlisted men and officers mm-hmm. within the armed forces. It just showed, again, how much baseball was just part of American culture.
Dr. Paul Marino with us from Hillsdale College, where he teaches history and constitutional history, but also taught a one-credit course on baseball recently, too. We talk about the history of baseball and the business of baseball. Major League Baseball had been exclusively Northeast Midwest franchises. When does expansion west and south begin, or relocation west and south begin? How did that begin to affect the league?
Yeah, one of the most important things about baseball as a business, too, is that it's what economists call a cartel, mm-hmm. You know, legal monopoly. And there's an interesting story in American constitutional history about that. And that meant that, you know, the economic theory is monopoly providers are going to give you less baseball than the consumer wants at a higher price. And that's exactly what they did. And so the fact that for 50 years, from 1903 until 1953, you had eight teams in each league in a particular city, and there was no movement and no expansion. And that just shows the kind of power that the owners had.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, after World War II, and I think the key thing was baseball began to face competition from professional basketball and football. And that was because the new media of television, especially, those sports were a lot more attractive. Baseball aficionados today will say that it's a better game to listen to on the radio than it is to watch on television, whereas basketball and football are TV sports.
Yes.
So baseball began to face competition.
Let's talk about present future, because there's a lot of questions about that. The CBA is up, and recently in baseball, veterans are getting left behind because teams realize you get the value from the player mm-hmm. when they're young and underpaid. Yep. They don't want to overpay now for players on the decline. So you have that. You have pace of play questions. Mm-hmm. You have you know, launch angle, too many home runs, not enough balls in play, mm-hmm. too many strikeouts. All these things seemingly coming to a head as the CBA is coming up again. What do you see as how these questions get answered and the future for baseball in the entertainment sports arena? You
know, well, the biggest changes recently were revenue sharing and luxury tax. And that's something among the owners always is this problem of competitive balance. And, you know, if you look at the six divisions that you have today, and there's also questions of whether there'll be some more expansion
right.
and whether baseball will go to a 4x4 division thing, sort of like football. This is why the wild card introduction has been so important, because in the six divisions today, five of them are pretty much one team running away, and the NL Central is the only one that's really, you know, compressed in terms of the performance of the teams. Maybe some kind of salary cap or, you know, total revenue limit for the teams would be part of it that the owners would want to get the players to accept that. And the players are still, you know, in the old days when you had the reserve clause,
mm-hmm.
where a team would pretty much own a player for his entire life. And
right.
someone like poor George Sisler had spent his entire year with the entire career with the St. Louis Browns, or Walter Johnson for the Washington Senators. But you still have a reserve clause. It's just limited to the pre-free agency period of 6 years, and even within that, they're eligible for arbitration, right. so the younger players before free agency are still exploited in a technical economic sense, so not to the degree they were before. And as you mentioned, the older players are overpaid. They are cashing in after free agency, but the long-term contracts make them often big mistakes. Mistakes that the Yankees have made a lot of. So so I think the way they're doing now, where they're converting the younger players' contracts,
right.
is smart, getting more of them in their prime years and not making such a commitment to the, you know, the 20th year of their career. So these are all things that in a normally, you know, competing market, since you have in baseball now essentially a bilateral monopoly, you have a player's cartel and an owner's cartel, these things can be worked out if people keep their senses.
Dr. Paul Marino, William and Bertie Screwcock Chair in Constitutional History, Professor of History, Dean of Social Science, big-time baseball fan. Thank you for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Great to be on the show.
Up next, we talk with author Mark Morano about his new book, Green Fraud, Why the Green New Deal is Even Worse Than You Think. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Hi, I'm Dan Scott, owner of Eagle Eye Painting. Spring is traditionally a time for home improvement projects. A new paint job is a great place to start. At Eagle Eye Painting, we handle interior, exterior, and cabinets. Plus, we offer minor repairs for drywall and dry rot. We are fully licensed, bonded, insured, and do residential and commercial painting. Please visit our website at danscottpainting.com and read the customer reviews. Then give us a call at 400-5152 to schedule a free estimate. We would love the chance to do a great job for you. Call us today, 400-5152, Eagle Eye Painting.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
Your friendly oil change, Premier, and all we do.
Premier Oil Change has been locally owned and operated since we opened in 2006, enjoying long-term relationships with our team members and loyal guests. Many of our team members have worked with us for over 10 years. Many of our certified technicians have logged over 30,000 oil changes, working on hundreds of different vehicle makes and models. In an ever-changing world, we strive to keep up with change with our extensive training program. It's important to the staff at Premier Oil Change that our customers' cars are well taken care of by experienced, well-trained technicians. So you can depend on your vehicle to get you and your family to your destination. Don't forget that you can earn free oil changes with Premier Rewards. Learn more at PremierOilChange.com or visit us in Palo Cedro. Premier is in the Holiday Market Shopping Center or in Redding on Lake Boulevard next to Waterworks Park or our newest location in Anderson across from Roundtable. Remember, you get a free car wash with every oil change. Premier Oil Change, home of the friendly oil change.
Orchard Nutrition Center, your local neighborhood health food store. We are dedicated to the healthy lifestyle, and we strive for a high standard to carry organic, GMO-free, and clean, healthy products.
Because you are worth it.
Because you are worth it.
Because you are worth it.
We have certified nutritionists on staff that take pride in helping you. Supporting local, we are all in it together. Orchard Nutrition Center, Cypress Square Shopping Center, Reading.
March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, and there is no better time to get screened than right now. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, colorectal cancer screenings have declined by 86%, and as a result, up to 10,000 more deaths are projected over the next decade. With early detection, colon cancer has a 90% survival rate, and it may even be preventable with a colonoscopy. At Reading Endoscopy Center, our number one priority is the health and safety of our patients, and our center has always been committed to maintaining strict infection control and prevention protocols. Schedule your colonoscopy today by calling us at 530-246-7000 or visiting readingendoscopy.com. Visit readingendoscopy.com.
A building that's meant to last is not built overnight. And for centuries, the cornerstone has been crucial to guide each brick and wall that comes after. A strong community relies on many cornerstones. So at Cornerstone Community Bank, we've taken our name to heart. Whether it's your business or your family, we'll provide the financial cornerstone that you need to build on. We're local. We're community. We're your cornerstone. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Zip on over to Drip, now open at 2766 Falls Ferry Road in Anderson, next to Anytime Fitness. Drip features healthy and delicious drinks and shakes. Drip offers energy teas packed with antioxidants, delicious full meal replacement shakes, coffee loaded with protein, power oats, energy drinks, and so much more. Drip is open Monday through Friday from 7 to 7 and weekends 8 to 4. Stop by today, 2766 Falls Ferry Road in Anderson. Zip on over to Drip.
I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
And we co-host Writing Roots.
It's a 10-minute podcast in which we, an author,
and her editor,
cover lessons we've learned about the writing process.
So whether you're an experienced storyteller or still working on that first book,
now is the time to check us out.
Writing Roots is available on iTunes, Spotify, and anywhere you find your podcasts. And don't forget to always
write selfishly.
Meet Stella the seahorse and her companions in Washed Ashore, Art to Save the Sea, now on display at Turtle Bay Exploration Park. Delightful and shocking, this indoor-outdoor exhibition highlights the perils of plastic pollution. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Find us on Twitter at Hillsdale Radio. We're joined now by Mark Morano. His brand new book is Green Fraud, Why the Green New Deal is Even Worse Than You Think. He's a former senior staff member of the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee, publisher of ClimateDepot.com, and author of previous books as well. Mark, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Scott. Happy to be here.
The Green New Deal, certainly it is a phrase that people are familiar with, but in this past year of COVID and all that has come with it, I do wonder if it's been pushed to the background a bit in terms of awareness. Remind our listeners, what is this Green New Deal all about?
Well, the Green New Deal originally made national headlines in 2019 with Representative Ocasio-Cortez, who came out of essentially nowhere in Brooklyn and became the congressman and took up this cause of the Green New Deal. It eventually became legislation co-sponsored by Senator Markey in the Senate. And what this was a, and the architects admit this, it's not a change the climate bill, it's a change the whole economy bill. This became a catch-all phrase for everything and anything that was on the progressive wish list agenda. They were going to radically transform, centrally plan America from top to bottom, including, you know, homes, car ownership, what we eat, how we travel, our connecting our home thermostats, our appliances, environmental justice, free college for all, free health care, free paychecks, you don't have to work, you know, abolishing, you know, tearing down buildings and rebuilding them in greener ways. I mean, it was just all of it, socialist utopia thrown into one bundle of thing. That's essentially the Green New Deal. It's nothing to do with climate and energy, and instead it's using a climate scare to impose a progressive wish list upon America.
Of course, across the country, lockdowns were put in place toward the beginning, and some are still largely in place in some areas of the country. And there were whispers out there, if you were listening closely enough, about, you know, we could do the same sort of thing to help the planet. We could have lockdowns like this to make sure our greenhouse emissions are as low as we want them to be. Those were real conversations happening, weren't there?
Yes, I have two separate chapters in the book that deal with this very thing. One of them is about essentially jealousy. The climate activists were jealous at how a lot of the things they had advocated, severe limits on travel to reduce emissions, gutting the airline industry, severe economic restrictions that would lower CO2 emissions. They were praising the lockdowns. And I have in the book people like John Kerry, Al Gore, Greta Thunberg, United Nations officials, climate activists, academia, praising lockdowns so much that some of them are openly calling for transferring from COVID lockdowns to climate lockdowns and to keep these going. I quote the UK House of Commons speaker who actually says, he was amazed at how compliant the public was to COVID lockdowns and mandates, and now is the time to strike with a version of climate lockdowns. And keep in mind, at UN summits, and I have the whole section on this in the book, climate activists had sought planned recessions in order to fight global warming because you lower emissions during a recession, during economic contraction. They talked about a degrowth movement. Even Greta Thunberg herself talked about the fairy tales of economic growth. How dare you, she told the United Nations. Well, what are lockdowns but planned recessions? The greatest thing that happened, according to the climate actors, UK Guardian had an article about, you know, a lockdown every other year to save the climate. You know, if we could have a lockdown like we had in 2020, every other year we could meet our climate obligations. This is the way they think. They don't care about human suffering, human freedom, liberty, free association, everything that we thought were the hallmarks of America is at odds with what the Green New Deal and COVID connection represent.
How does China benefit from these climate initiatives of the West? What danger might that pose to the U.S. in the future?
Well, I mean, first of all, China is the one that initiated the lockdowns. Now, keep in mind, remember, and the lockdowns have been the greatest boon to China you could ever have, because China really didn't lock down. And you know, what they did is sent out these propaganda videos of people dropping down the street and then people being hammered in their homes. They're one of the largest contributors, the World Health Organization. World Health Organization promoted this. CDC picked it up. And the idea was, if you want to survive this second coming of the Spanish flu, you have to lock down your society. So we and I criticize President Trump in here. I criticize Larry Kudlow, his chief economic advisor, for allowing this to happen in the United States. But what that did is it caused a large transfer of wealth from poor and middle class to the wealthy billionaire class. So Walmart, Amazon, Big Tech, all of them have benefited greatly, while the rest of America was hammered economically. And so what that does, it's set up where China now is in an even greater position of calling the shots economically. So now you have Joe Biden come in as president, and he is literally shutting down American energy. First move was to shut down Keystone Pipeline. Now he's going after mining, drilling on federal lands. He's going after fracking, a death of 1,000 cuts. He's making every agency a climate agency. He's going after the financial system, not allowing them to invest. So what is that ultimately going to mean? It means American energy independence and dominance is going to be strangled the life out of it. And who's that going to benefit? China, Russia, the Middle East. We're back to fighting wars for energy because we're not producing it domestically. The Earth it's not that the Earth won't notice. The Earth will notice, because there's going to be a lot more pollutants in the air, because we offshore our energy to the Middle East, China, Venezuela, Russia. They don't have the environmental standards that we do. And so China loves this because they pay lip service to the climate. At the same time, they're building record numbers of coal plants every month.
Mark Morano with us. His book, Green Fraud, Why the Green New Deal is Even Worse Than You Think. Mark, we're in a tough spot, of course. Democrats have the White House and the House and a 50-50 split in the Senate, but control of the Senate with a tie-breaking vote. These are all politicians who likely would be sympathetic to the Green New Deal. So what do we do about it?
Well, right now, it's a great question. The first thing, though, is you have to look at where the pressure is coming from externally. And one of the biggest things they've done is co-opted kids. They failed to scare adults about climate. Mm-hmm. So they start in kindergarten all the way through college. Kids are indoctrinated, scholastic textbooks, Common Core curriculum. And so kids have been lobbying our Congress, our Senate, our politicians. They've been going to Capitol Hill, testifying. Greta Thunberg testified. We have kids testifying that their parents have trashed the earth. Thanks, Mom and Dad. It's up to us to clean it. So these politicians are hearing all this. And you're right. Right now, the ones who could stop a Green New Deal legislatively would be people like Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia. But it's hard to say where a Lisa Murkowski senator or a senator from Maine and other places, how they Republicans might vote Susan Collins, because they're very sympathetic and they're very weak on these issues. So it's hard to say. I think what we need to do is challenge the narrative. You first challenge the fact that there is no climate crisis, no climate emergency, that you can't even distinguish human influence from natural variability. And then you challenge the cost-benefit analysis of the Green New Deal. In other words, even if we faced a climate emergency, we'd all be doomed. And then you challenge the national security implications. I mean, they are throwing away American energy independence for a fantasy.
Mark Morano, former senior staff member of the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee, publisher of ClimateDepot.com, where you can find more, and the book out now, Green Fraud, Why the Green New Deal is Even Worse Than You Think. Mark, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it, Scott. Thank you.
Up next, Brad Berzer from Hillsdale's History Department will join us talking about westward expansion in the 1800s. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere ag and turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
Pro Rehab Physical Therapy and Sports Performance is now open at 3673 Eureka Way.
Physical therapists Kevin Elo and Rachel Lang have a combined 29 years of experience in helping those who've suffered orthopedic injuries, strains, and sprains. Kevin has worked with the USA Gymnastics team, NFL Combine, and professional BMX riders. He's also helped members of Cirque du Soleil get back into action. Rachel works closely with seniors and is also a group fitness instructor and adept at returning people to an active lifestyle. Both Kevin and Rachel at Pro Rehab Physical Therapy and Sports Performance are accepting new clients. Give them a call today, 530-533-5030. If you are in need of physical therapy, talk to the experts at Pro Rehab Physical Therapy and Sports Performance at 3673 Eureka Way. Call 530-533-5030. That's 530-533-5030 today.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide three delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Remodeled kitchen, bathroom, or backyard patio? There's a lot of choices, but only one leader, Estate Granite.
Mike Huber has such a professional attitude and a can-do work ethic that makes him a joy to work with. Mike and his crew worked to have our new kitchen finished in 5 days. We came back to a true work of art.
Hi, this is Brian Filato, broker and co-owner of The Real Estate Group. In today's competitive market, I think what's important is that the house is dialed in and turnkey. And what's important is that the kitchen has been renovated, the bathrooms have been renovated, granite, beautiful cabinetry. Those things make a significant difference.
Mike at Estate Granite has an eye for detail, an attention to perfection, and a quality build crew that are masters of their craft. Mike was there from start to finish.
Hi, this is Mike from Estate Granite. I know how important quality to a homeowner is, so give me a call at 241-STONE or come by our showroom at 4900 Mountain Lakes Boulevard or visit us at EstateGranite.com.
Hi, I'm Arielle Winter. If you're anything like me, your pets are not only your best friends, they're part of your family. American Humane, which has been rescuing animals like Cleo here for more than 100 years, has life-saving tips that can make a big difference in a disaster. When disaster strikes, you want to protect your whole family, including your pets. To help keep your family safe and help our best friends in their worst times, find tips at AmericanHumane.org.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. You can get an email every time there's a new episode of the program. Go to radiohour.hillsdale.edu and enter your email address, radiohour.hillsdale.edu. We're joined now by Dr. Brad Berzer, Professor of History, and Russell Amos Kirk, Chair in American Studies at Hillsdale College. Dr. Berzer, thanks for joining us again.
Thanks, Scott. Always glad to be here. Really appreciate it.
We talked today about westward expansion.
Great.
And we'll mention, too, if people want a little bit more information about this or tangential subjects, there is a online course. They can find it online at hillsdale.edu, where you talk more about westward expansion. The Northwest Ordinance is very important to understand westward expansion. What was the Northwest Ordinance? Why would it continue to be so important in westward expansion?
Yeah, it's a great question, Scott. So for us, especially at a place like Hillsdale, the Northwest Ordinance in many ways is everything. It's one of the great founding documents. So when people in the 19th century looked back at the founding, they always put four documents together. They always put together the Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederation, the Northwest Ordinance, and then the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
So it was actually considered what they would have called, in terms of common law, one of the four organic laws. And it's especially important for us, not just because it governs Michigan and allows Michigan to be a free state. It does all kinds of things in terms of what settlement is, in terms of what education is. But it also really shapes our very notion about what it meant to be a citizen in the American Republic and understand who and what we are as people living and trying to live out a Republican lifestyle,
mm-hmm.
Not just in government, but in our actual culture. So it was a really formative document. It's also for us very important because one of the early historians here, in fact, the earliest historian at Hillsdale College, Ransom Dunn, was deeply influenced by the document. And in 1854, when there was a protest against the idea that we could have a mere majority vote to decide what would be enslaved and what wouldn't. This, of course, is rejected as a violation of the natural law, of the common law, of everything. People like Ransom Dunn helped form the Republican Party and did so in Jackson, Michigan, and Ripon, Wisconsin, but they took the name Republican from the old Northwest Ordinance. This was regarded as the great Republican document of the modern era, as much as the Constitution was. We don't hold it in that kind of esteem in 2020, but in the 19th century they did.
So in 1803, President Jefferson completes the Louisiana Purchase, which we all learned about in school.
Of course.
Why was westward expansion and then that purchase so important to Jefferson?
Not just to Jefferson, but definitely to Jefferson. Jefferson was a dreamer, no question about that. He was regarded as the polar star of discovery. That was one of his titles that was given to him by American citizens. And I love that. I mean, can you imagine giving that kind of high title to a president? It says something about what kind of character that president was.
Mm-hmm.
But Jefferson had, as early as 1776, had been formulating the Virginia Constitution. It was not the one that was ratified by Virginia, but he had been formulating a Virginia Constitution. Some people even speculate it's why other Virginians sent him to the Continental Congress to get rid of him.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want his kind of radical ideas. But in that Constitution for Virginia, which he tries to implement then when he's governor, that is the basis of the Northwest Ordinance. So all of our ideas from the Northwest Ordinance, which is passed on July 13th of 1787, those all come from Jefferson's Constitution. And it was a very anti-slavery document, just brilliant. But I think the best way to put this, and I still struggle with trying to figure out how to articulate this exactly, but for Jefferson and for many of the founders, the West was the future of the Republic.
Mm.
In other words, it is the Republic. And it doesn't matter what we've done in the 13 original states if we can't replicate that in Ohio and Michigan and Indiana and Illinois. It's worthless because then we're just another empire.
Talking with Dr. Brad Berzer on westward expansion here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. A year after the Louisiana Purchase, the Lewis and Clark Expedition begins. I've heard you describe this as not just one of the greatest events in American history, but in human history. What makes it so?
Yeah, I would rank it as one of the greatest events in human history, and not just to throw the gauntlet down, but I think there are reasons for that. It's very rare in history where we see government, business, and local communities coming together in terms of just science and exploration. We saw it in China in the 15th century under a great admiral, Zheng He. The Chinese, before they went into their isolationist phase, had an amazing armada. We're exploring Africa. They were in the Pacific. I mean, this was a major, major power. We have the same thing with Lewis and Clark. Jefferson puts all of the resources of a country behind this expedition, which could have been just regarded as another military expedition. Mm-hmm. Let's go find out where the Indians are. We know how to either get in their way or not get in their way. We'll find out where strategic ports are. None of that would I dismiss. They're doing all of that. But at the same time, when we look at Jefferson's letters to Lewis and Clark, they're always about figure out exactly what the flora and the fauna is. When you meet with the Indians, find out, do they look like Jews? Do they seem like Jews? Because the lost tribe of Israel, they're looking, you know, obviously ridiculous to us in 2020. But in 1803 is a major question. Mm-hmm. You know, is their language related to Hebrew? I mean, these are the kinds of things that they wanted to know. Jefferson wanted to know, were there vapors coming out of the land that made the Indians stronger than Europeans? Why was it that the Indians seemed to have a primitive culture, as they would have put it then, but this robust understanding of life? Mm-hmm. How could they do that? You know, were there mastodons? Were there mammoths? Of course, none of that's there. But you can imagine if you're sitting in Monticello or if you're in Washington, D.C., those are perfectly logical questions to ask about Wyoming. And of course, there are places in Wyoming that breathe vapors.
Right.
So it's real, and yet it's not. There's a fantastic element.
To this day, when we think of the West, there's an idea of openness and individual freedom. How did those ideas of liberty and freedom shape westward expansion even back in the 1800s?
Completely. 100%. There can be no separation of the idea of liberty and westward expansion. You know, and I like to remind my students, you think about these generations coming up on millennia in which the soil in Europe has been used over and over and over again. And even with plagues and retrenchments, you know, it's still that soil is used and your population is kind of static. And then you get to a place like northern Indiana, and all you have to do is reach into the soil, and it is black, and it is beautiful, it is loam, it is rich, it is full of everything you need to grow. Mm-hmm. And so we have diaries of people settling in Indiana in the 1800s, in the 18-teens, in which they are literally, and I'm not exaggerating, Scott, they are having steak for breakfast. They're having it for lunch. They're having it for dinner and a bedtime snack. Right? I mean, can you imagine what we would look like, you know, if we had steak for four meals a day? But they're burning it off. They're working it. Yeah, they're living. They get up with the sun. They go to bed with the sun. And of course, they're having kids like no one has ever seen. I mean, again, no exaggeration. We have never seen a population, a procreative increase in America or anywhere in the world like we saw on the American frontier. The average woman on the American frontier was having 13 live births. Now, not in cities, right? We're not talking New York, but I'm talking west of Cincinnati, right? And that's incredible. You know, basically from puberty until menopause, every 18 months a woman's having a child. And, you know, it's not that we're engaging in the sexual act more than anyone else. We're no different, right? We're Americans, but it's because of our nutrition and the ability. And so that idea of freedom and growth, that ability, look, I can have this many kids and they can still have their own land.
Sure.
They can each have their own land and they used to call this the American multiplication table, right? They can do this over and over again. And of course, they thought it was endless. I mean, Jefferson thought it would take 1,000 years to reach St. Louis. Jefferson, the smartest man of his day, said it would take 1,000 years, right? When he said that, we were ready to bring Missouri in as a state 18 years later, right? I mean, he was really, really off, but I mean, that's how long they thought we had. Nobody thought that we would have conquered the continent within a century. And that's just stunning. And we did it mostly just by procreating.
Dr. Brad Berzer, Professor of History, and Russell Amos Kirk, Chair in American Studies at Hillsdale College, talking westward expansion. Dr. Berzer, thanks for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Always, Scott. Love it.
Up next, we talk with Hillsdale alumnus Devin Foley about his time here at Hillsdale and his work at the Charlemagne Institute. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Hey guys, Dave Ramsey here. Join me and the Ramsey personalities as we give you the tools and motivation you need to win in the areas of money, career, and more right here on The Ramsey Show. Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station.
Hi, my name's Nick Gardner. I have a show here on KCNR Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. every other Sunday. The name of my show is Poke the Hornet's Nest.
There's no mountain I can't climb. There's no tower too high. No plane that I can't learn how to fly. What do I gotta do to get through to you to show you there ain't nothing I can't take this chainsaw through?
I'm going to concentrate on local politics mainly, but we'll talk about national politics also. You'll get the view of the common citizen here in Redding, California. And remember, today is the first day of the rest of your life. Maybe it's a good time for a new perspective about what's been going on in our town, in our state, in our nation. I hope you tune in and hear the other side of the news.
Everybody, listen up!
Hi, this is Dr. Patricia Bay, and my radio show, Therapy in a Nutshell, which airs on Saturdays at 11 a.m., on KCNR, 1460 AM, or 96.5 FM, is a great show for you to listen to and learn how to effectively change your life. We talk about issues such as communication and trust, couples issues, and many more. Also, you can listen to the radio show on my podcast through the Anchor app, which is free and safe, or you can tune into the iTunes or Spotify podcast and listen to it there. It's a nice show that'll help you throughout the day and throughout your life. So join me for Therapy in a Nutshell, Saturdays, 11 a.m. at KCNR Radio. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, trying to heal the world 1 hour at a time.
You get me every time.
This is RC from Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor. Today we're talking about Trinidad's Espiritu Series Number 2. Crafted with tobaccos from Brazil and Nicaragua and wrapped in an Arapiraca leaf, Espiritu No. 2 produces a harmonious medium to full-bodied cigar with extraordinary zesty complexity and earthy notes. Come by the shop and pick up your Trinidad Espiritu No. 2 today, 2143 Hilltop Drive, Redding.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300, a reputation for excellence since 1965.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
This is KCNR Radio, 1460 AM, 96.5 FM, and streaming live at KCNR1460.com with Carl and Linda Bach.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We say hello and welcome to all of our new listeners on Talk 101 FM in Decatur, Illinois, WZUS, the Talk of Decatur. Thank you for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. We're joined now by Devin Foley. He is co-founder and CEO of Charlemagne Institute and also a
2001 graduate of Hillsdale College. Devin, thanks so much for joining us.
Scott, thank you for having me. It's a treat to be able to speak with my alma mater. So.
First, we ask about your time here at Hillsdale. Tell us a little bit about how Hillsdale College came onto your radar screen and why you chose to attend Hillsdale.
First, let me just say that I think it was it's in the top three of best choices I've made in my life. And I came to know about Hillsdale. I grew up in a rural part of San Diego and had always been interested in, you know, politics and ideas in that world. And one of my mom's friends was a recipient of Imprimis and turned us on to it. I had already visited a few colleges in Southern California to look at, and then I went to Hillsdale. My mom just sort of said, no, you need to go. I got a feeling about it. And what won me over, you know, almost instantly was just the depth of discussion, the seriousness of the students in the class, and it was more than I had seen anywhere else. And so that little visit, I said, yep, I'm coming here if you'll have me, and the rest is history. So,
when you arrived at Hillsdale and spent your years here, what did you do? What were your majors? What were you involved with here on campus?
Absolutely. So I was a history and political science double major. I was also in the fraternity Delta Tau Delta. I was president at a time for activities board. I even got homecoming king, which was fun. So, you know, I did debate as well. So my time at Hillsdale was very busy, and it was an excellent preparation for life.
What sticks with you about your years here at Hillsdale? What do you remember most?
Yeah, from the classroom, what I absolutely fell in love with was the Socratic method and the lecture style of the professors. You know, it wasn't just a lecture. There was a lot of engagement. And the professors were patient, too. If you were, you know, you're trying to understand something or fine-tune an idea, they would entertain that. And yet ended up having wonderful classroom discussions that have stuck with me my whole life. The other part, of course, I was an only child with a single mom. So going into a fraternity with a bunch of guys, it was a really good experience for me there, just to be able to grow more as far as who I am and to have that social circle. And even now, all of us are on a shared text message. You know, I mean, we're texting back and forth every day. And so it's been a friendships that have lasted a lifetime. And I'm grateful for that. I also met my wife there. So she graduated in 2001. She was in a sorority. She was Kappa, and then she was a history education major with a minor in Spanish. And both of us are just very grateful to the school.
I want to ask Devin Foley, who is a 2001 graduate of Hillsdale College, about how Hillsdale prepped him for post-school life, but first we should find out a little bit about what he's done in that time. You're currently co-founder, CEO of Charlemagne Institute. Tell us a bit about what that is.
Yeah, absolutely. So shortly after graduating from college, I found myself with a conservative state-based think tank, Center of the American Experiment, here in Minnesota, and I climbed the ranks, became the director of development, but my passion was always much more on ideas, not so much public policy, and getting ideas out to younger Americans. You know, essentially taking what I'd learned at Hillsdale and trying to share it with as many people as possible. And so an opportunity came to spin off a program called Intellectual Takeout. I did that in 2009, completely independent of the think tank. And yeah, we had incredible growth. We added 700,000 followers on Facebook and another 700,000 followers on a different page. The audience was primarily, especially a few years ago, was 18 to 22-year-olds, 20-somethings. And we actually had the audience matched to addresses and voter databases, and we found over 60% of the audience was registered either as a Democrat or an independent. And we learned a lot. And we, in 2018, we came to the conclusion that we cannot fight the culture war as it is without deeply acknowledging Western civilization, its traditions, competing ideas, but also the Christian, Judeo-Christian worldview that was, you know, at its core for the culture. And so that caused us to look, say, okay, we need a name that's strong, shows what we stand for, but is also a uniter, both in the sense of deep history with Western civilization, but also from a Christian perspective.
How do you attract and engage readers to find out what you're talking about and what you're writing about?
Yeah, that's a good question. We generally are a little bit different of a shop. We don't focus on public policy. Our focus is culture. So actually the full name of Chronicles magazine is Chronicles, a magazine of American culture. And we did that with intellectual takeout, too. We see it that you have to, you know, if you want, let's say, conservative or, you know, traditional public policy to take place, you need to win the hearts and minds of the people. And so that's what we aim to do. Part of our success, and we just learned this by cutting our teeth and communicating with a very diverse audience, is to actually spend a lot of time on these basic building blocks of culture, of friendship, what is virtue, what's the point of dating, parenting, kids reading, how the education is going. So we focus a lot of our energy at those very truly culturally foundational areas. And what we find is, I mean, it's, unfortunately, the culture out there is kind of a wasteland. And I'll have older readers say, why are you talking about friendship? I know how to have friends. The thing is, a lot of the young people out there don't know how to have a friend and to develop that good relationship, you know, and a sense of trust and bonding with another person. So by addressing that, while also weaving in political philosophy and, you know, opinion pieces, we sort of sit in a very unique position out there.
Let me circle back to the question of how Hillsdale College helped to prepare you for what you're doing at Charlemagne Institute.
Absolutely. I go back to the Socratic method, the honest pursuit of truth, which is what I was taught at Hillsdale. You know, most people will say, oh, Hillsdale is just conservative, right-wing, this or that. Not the case at all. I mean, we spent more time reading, you know, Marx and Engels and everything else that we did of, you know, what people would think of as conservative voices. But what I learned, again, was that to be able to pursue truth, you have to ask a lot of questions. But it's not critical thinking in the sense of you're just trying to knock something down. What Hillsdale taught is how to ask the questions that enable you to build. You know, it's kind of, you know, it's an easy thing to throw a rock through a stained glass window if you find a fault with it. It's an entirely different game to be able to pursue truth and build a stained glass window. And that's where we try and go for that. And I try to Hillsdale tremendously with helping me know how to think logically and rationally, and certainly not just what to think.
Evan Foley, co-founder and CEO of Charlemagne Institute and also a 2001 graduate of Hillsdale College. Evan, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Absolutely, Scott. Thank you so much, and keep up the good work at Hillsdale. It's making a tremendous difference.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Dr. Paul Moreno from Hillsdale, talking about how baseball became a big business in America. We also talked with Mark Morano about his new book, Green Fraud, Why the Green New Deal is Even Worse Than You Think, Brad Berzer from Hillsdale's History Department on Westward Expansion, and Devin Foley, a Hillsdale graduate, now running the Charlemagne Institute. Find more information at radiohour.hillsdale.edu. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour podcast. Find it at SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, or Amazon Podcasts. Search for The Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
email us at radiohour@hillsdale.edu. The assistant producer of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour is Nate Esbenshade. To find out more about Hillsdale College, head to hillsdale.edu. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
You know, it can be difficult to find a trustworthy, knowledgeable, and yet affordable auto repair shop. Advanced Automotive is the second generation, locally owned, full-service repair shop serving our community since 1993, and one of only four AAA-approved auto repair shops in the Reading area. Advanced Automotive has a goal.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.